This is The Den Show.
I'm Chris Kay and welcome to The Den Show. This is your audio martial arts magazine with news, events, features, interviews and tons more. The podcast covers everything from kung fu to kickboxing to BJJ and taekwondo. Coming up, fifth dan karateka Rakesh Patel and his concept of the duality of a theme. Hear how he views kata from two uniquely different perspectives.
I approach karate kata from a competence point of view. I, at the other end of the scale, kata combat, it's for me, but it's in protection of me.
The chairman of the British Taekwondo Control Board, Adrian Tranter, has the lowdown on the fourth BTCB Open.
We're hopeful that once again we'll attract teams from all over the world, Korea, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland.
And Al Peasland, the reality combat instructor, with his biggest self-protection lessons.
Firstly, being able to take a shot, or several. And I think having that inner control, the inner understanding to be able to face that, having confidence in your abilities.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kay. News.
First of all, let's check out some of the martial arts headlines. The Telegraph and Argus reports that the Greengates Quest Taekwondo member Jason Mann has extended his record to 4 wins in as many matches. The 9-year-old, whose speciality is dynamic kicking, fought twice at the recent Doncaster Dome competition. Jason has been doing the sport for nearly a year and is improving week by week, showing skill, confidence, strength and determination. Meanwhile, in Manchester, the Great Britain Taekwondo Academy hosted the nation's top junior athletes at a national junior camp. On the back of 2 development camps held in April, the top 20 athletes from those camps were invited back for further assessment and a chance to develop their skills in a high-performance environment, according to the British Taekwondo website. Athletes were placed in another demanding environment, which saw the introduction of more competitive sparring scenarios, an increase in technical and tactical coaching, exposure to workshops utilising video feedback and introducing a psychological mindset in the ring. The coaching team continued to vigorously assess the athlete's taekwondo ability and professional behaviour in a full-time environment, with a bigger aim to talent spot athletes for a full-time homestay programme at a centralised academy in Manchester. Elsewhere, the British Judo Association reports that Colin Oates won a bronze medal at the 2011 Bucharest World Cup, his second bronze this year, adding to a bronze medal win at the European Championships in April. After being injured at the start of the year, Oates is undoubtedly back on form and put in another hard-fought performance at the World Cup on Saturday the 4th of June, winning 4 out of his 5 fights. Commenting on Oates' performance, the head coach said Colin put in a very good performance. He is getting consistent results now at this level, which is really encouraging to see. British karate teacher Chris Denwood has published a new book. It's a collection of his articles and short philosophical thoughts on the analysis of traditional karate for civilian self-protection and personal growth. The book is called Respecting the Old, Creating the New. It is heavily illustrated with over 230 pictures, and contents include sections on history, kata bunkai, training methods, theoretical study, pragmatic application, as well as some of the author's personal insights, experiences and stories. And finally, for now, TV personality Kate Garraway and friend Claire Nasir have been getting into the fighting spirit with a martial arts workout. The friends have recruited a personal trainer to teach them self-defense. Daybreak presenter Kate and weather girl Claire have been seen executing some high kicks in a London park. Dressed in white training outfits, the ladies perform bag drills, tuck jumps and star jumps. And if you want to check out more news, just head to the blog online at thedenshow.com.
This is The Den Show.
Still to come, fifth dan karateka Rakesh Patel and his concept of the duality of a theme.
They're trained very differently. One is in a gi, for the competence point of view, and the combat, I don't tend to train in a gi. It's just with other people taking principles from the kata and drilling them.
And Al Peasland, the reality combat instructor, with his biggest self-protection lessons.
Being able to hit really hard. You know, as Jeff always says, you know, number one self-defense tip, hit really hard.
Events.
So let's welcome on to the Den Show, Adrian Tranter, who's the chairman of the British Taekwondo Control Board. Hi, Adrian.
Hello, how are you, Chris?
Very well, thank you for being on the Den Show today. We're looking ahead to the fourth BTCB Open, which is coming up this autumn. So just tell me a little bit more about the event and where is it happening and when is it happening?
Well, the event happens, as you've rightly alluded to, in October, and it is the fourth British Open, which is ranked by the WTF as a G2 standard. So records higher point scoring for the athletes that's going to be joining us from around the world. So it is currently ranked in the top two. There are only two outside the G3, and we are one of them. So we're hopeful that once again we'll attract teams from all over the world, Korea, China, USA, Iran, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland. So yeah, it's going to be certainly one of the highlights of the calendar yet again.
Brilliant. So who is eligible to enter then?
Nationally, obviously people that have secured medal placings within the national championships. There are obviously some wild cards, and then obviously our national team. From abroad, we send out team invites to member national federations of the WTF so that we can attract the highest level of competitor. Our stakeholders, UK Sport, like us to attract the highest level so that our athletes can get top-notch competition here at in Manchester, so we have some home field advantage with our fantastic crowds that we attract.
And how will this competition be divided up? What are the divisions and the weight categories for this event?
Well, the weight categories will be split into WTF categories. They're all on the website. There's 8 male, 8 female. So they're all on the website. There's different weights for slightly different weights for obviously juniors and seniors, but they are standard WTF weight categories.
And what do you need to do if you're wanting to register and be involved in the event?
Well, the application forms will soon be out, but if you're from Great Britain, then you must be, as I said earlier, you must be ranked within Great Britain through the national championships. There are some wild cards. As a precursor to that, then obviously you have to be part of our organisation, the British Taekwondo Control Board.
So what about the wild card? Explain that. How does that work?
Well, that's open to the performance director, Gary Hall, and the coaches, Stephen Paul. And if there is, if someone is injured and can't compete at the Nationals, or for whatever reason has one bad day, one bad competition doesn't make a poor player. We recognise that. They will also look at past performance. As I say, what we're after in the British Open is quality, not quantity, which is why we can attract teams that don't particularly travel very far. The likes of Iran and China and some of the Korean and the professional teams don't particularly travel except in and around their own local areas, local countries. So to get teams with so many Olympic medalists, world championships, world champions and the like, you know, that's the strength of our competition, and that's why it's right up there in the WTF calendar as the event to do outside of the European championships, the Asian championships, etc. So yeah, exciting times.
Of course, it's not all about the competitors. You know, you've got people who, you know, help run the event, and you're looking for volunteers to help with the smooth running of the day as well, aren't you?
Yes, there is a volunteer program within Manchester. We one of our stakeholders, Manchester City Council, I've obviously spoke about UK Sport as well. They're very keen for the local volunteer program to get involved. And we have fantastic support. We've obviously got great staff down at the Squash Centre at Manchester next to the Manchester City Football Club. So, yeah, anyone interested in that, again, there's a button on the website. Once the information is posted on the website, anyone interested, click on the button, get involved in the Manchester Volunteer Group. They're a fantastic body. Help us out. And it's not always nice to see a friendly face, always helpful, and you know, we couldn't do it without them, really.
Adrian, thank you very much for that insight into what's coming up in the autumn.
My pleasure.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kay.
There is plenty of interesting content to have a look at on the website at the moment. On the blog, check out the extreme stretching video. it may make you wince a little bit. And in the article section, you can download the free Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Roadmap ebook. It's a 35-page, fully illustrated book giving you a basic grappling framework. Just head to thedenshow.com. That's thedenshow.com.
The Den Show.
Hello, my name's Darren Daly, and I'm a level 5 football referee. I present the Referees World podcast with my colleague from Somerset FA, the county training officer, Richard Mellon. Each month we discuss refereeing news, we have days for the diary, we discuss rather entertaining match incidents, and of course we have special guests. You can listen to the Referees World podcast either through iTunes, just go onto iTunes and search for Referees World and subscribe for free, or you can go to refereesworld.co.uk.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kay.
So let's welcome on to The Den Show Rakesh Patel, who is a fifth dan in Shotokan Karate with the British Combat Association. And he also holds an instructor qualification with Ian Abernethy as well. Hello.
Hi there, Chris.
So let's talk about one of the articles that you've got on your website, which is The Duality of a Theme. So first of all, just explain what you mean by that concept.
When I train kata, specifically kata, I approach it from two perspectives, because each perspective I see as being very different, but they bring different benefits, and you get more out of them if you train them that way. So I approach karate kata from a competence point of view, so I call it kata competence, and by that it's purely what does it feel like to me, what does it look like to somebody else, the rhythm, the timing, the technical excellence of the techniques, the breathing, what we call the kime. It's purely for a solo form for me. So I get a feeling when I finish the kata, was that good? Was it a good performance? Was it a bad performance? What do I need to work on? So that's what I call kata competence. Kata combat, at the other end of the scale, is, again, it's for me, but it's in protection of me. So kata combat is not how the kata feels to me, it's how it feels to my opponent. So they're trained very differently. One is in a gi for the competence point of view, and the combat, I don't tend to train in a gi, it's just with other people taking principles from the kata and drilling them.
These two perspectives, which one should you be studying first? Should you just jump in and kind of just go, right, I need to be able to defend myself, let's do it that way, or, you know, is it the competence that should come first?
I don't think it matters, to be honest, because I have students, kata combat students, that have got no karate or any martial arts background at all. They're doing the drills that everyone else is doing that have got a karate background just as effectively, you know, without any prior knowledge. They don't know what an inside block looks like or what it should feel like, with a gi on, and, you know, from a form point of view. But in terms of functional aspects, they're making it work. But what I will say is that the karate students that I have that have been training with me or elsewhere for 20 odd years and have kind of got into the combat side of it, all the years of doing an inside block, a downward block, a reverse punch a certain way does help, because when you teach it from a kata point of view, they've always got something to refer back to. And a number of times I have to say to them, look, you're doing this is great, but just come away a minute, do the kata, that's what the kata is, now apply that. And they think, oh yes, I remember now, of course I'm supposed to be doing the kata. So there's pros and cons there. You know, you could say, well, I don't need to know the kata. But if you do know the kata, then just bear in mind that use it. You know, the principles are all there to then apply.
So what are the kind of technical differences between the two ways of doing these things?
They're literally chalk and cheese. You know, the competence side of it, I'll talk from my point of view. I'm quite proud of the fact that, you know, that I have an above average, you know, technique. I have a good technique. I'm quite proud of it. It looks nice. It feels nice. You can tell I've been training a few years. There's no, you know, it's all nice and neat. The combative side of it, you wouldn't really, from an unlearned point of view, you wouldn't really know you're doing karate. It just looks a mess. It just looks like you're smashing arms, you're smashing heads, you're hitting and you're pushing and you're shoving and you're falling and you're tripping. To a learned person, you can kind of see, oh yeah, there's a kankudai in there, or isn't that NP, or, you know, aren't they doing, you know, hian nidan or something. But really, the link can be quite tenuous back to the actual kata itself. And then that just highlights how fighting is. You know, if it's neat and tidy, you're not fighting. It's going to be messy and chaotic.
Now, the duality of a theme can be seen in all the kata, but it's more prominent in kind of a certain series of kata. Which ones, and why is that so?
Well, I think it's well documented. I think the Heian series can be seen as, 1 to 5. Most schools teach them Shodan first, Nidan Sandan Yondan Godan, because they do get more technical in terms of competence. You know, you've got more kicks in there, you've got more diverse techniques in there, but really when you study them, they can be seen as being the principles that are captured in the first one are actually quite simple and basic, and then what happens after that, they address just different facets of fighting, and it progressively works its way through to kind of dealing with choices, and almost to the point where it's kind of like a, you know, there's like a free-form montage of everything that could probably happen and you need to cover. And the Heian theory is definitely has that. In my article, I mentioned two kata in particular, Jion and Jin. Now, Jin is a kata that's, I think, specific to Shotokan, but it's like a little, it's like a smaller form of Jion, but they definitely kind of have a theme there, because whatever you study in Jion is kind of the learnings that you have from that are implied and assume that you have that when you study Jin. Because what it does is it doesn't reuse anything, it doesn't overstate something. It assumes you knew that from Jion, you learned it from Jion. I'm only now going to tell you and capture everything over and above that. And I think that's why, you know, if you had to write something down, you wouldn't state the facts again. You wouldn't state the obvious again. You'd only put the new stuff on. And I think that's what the katas are doing there.
Now, is there like one perspective and way of doing the kata that will suit one type of person to another, or should you be just doing both of them together?
Well, no, I have. I think it's very much down to the individual. I have students that, to them, learning a kata from scratch, albeit one that's quite, you know, low on the syllabus, is a big deal to them. It's a massive challenge physically and mentally to remember it, to do it, to actually stand in front of somebody and say, look, this is what I've learned and this is what I can do. They appreciate that what they're doing is just, you know, arm movements and leg movements, and they appreciate there is a combative purpose to it, but they have no interest in it. And that doesn't make their kata practice invalid or wrong. It just means that they have a particular endpoint that is different to, say, somebody else. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I make a similar point in my Jion ebook, Chris, where I say, if you pick up most karate textbooks that are just a karate competence-based textbook, there'll be a section in there called Applications of Bunkai. And a lot of people will say, well, that's wrong because you're attacking with a karate punch and you're attacking with a karate kick. Nobody does that in real life. They've attacked you, they've blocked, and then they stay still. And I agree, if you look at it from a combative point of view, but what tends to happen is in that book, at no point, very few of them actually declare at the start of the section that this is the perspective they're taking these applications. And I think it's dangerous as an author. If you don't say anything, you're assuming that most people, what will happen is they'll assume that these are combative ones. These are supposed to be real. And all the author then gets is discredited because they haven't, you know, they haven't clarified by saying, well, I'm not trying to say this is going to work. I'm just trying to say this is going to help you focus when you do a kata from a competence point of view.
You can check out the full article on your website, along with some more articles as well. Where should people go if they want to read some more?
Rakesh-Patel.com. On there, all the articles are free. There's an ebook on there that I wrote on Jion that was actually my thesis submission for my fifth and for the BCA. And there's going to be, I've actually got a big glut of articles that I'm writing now that are going to go on there as well.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the Den Show today. Appreciate that.
No, my pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
This is the Den Show.
You can now follow the Den Show on Twitter and join the Den Show group on Facebook as well. Just do a little search on both of those social networking sites for the Den Show. And there's various ways to listen as well. You can stream the Den Show at thedenshow.com or download and subscribe via iTunes or podomatic.com.
Feature.
Al Peasland is a martial artist with 25 years of reality-based training under his belt. He holds black belt ranks with multiple governing bodies, is a qualified close protection operative, an NLP practitioner, writer and author, and he joins me now on the Den Show. Hi, Al.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for talking to me today.
No problem.
Now, you've had real-life experience of violent situations, so you know what this sort of stuff is like. What are the biggest self-protection lessons you've learned from being a doorman?
I'd say, firstly, being able to take a shot, or several, and have that hardiness to be able to weather the storm, I think, is important. I don't think you could I don't think you could work the door and not end up in a fight at some point, you know, if you've been on the door for several years. And often that will include you getting hit. You know, we can't always be the hammer. Sometimes we're the anvil. And so I think being able to handle that, and that just comes from lots of hard training. You know, the key is that not only can I take the punch and carry it, I can also do it without being shocked, so that when I immediately get hit, I'm not suffering the shock of being hit or hurt. And being able to cope under these circumstances, I think, is key. I think being able to recognise fear in all its different guises, whether it's, you know, massive fear, massive, you know, being incredibly scared and petrified, down to being anxious or slightly nervous, you know, the yellow fever kind of thing. And I think having that inner control, the inner understanding to be able to face that and not run away and turn away from it, to actually face it down and overcome it or go through it, I think that's crucial for surviving stuff outside. Having confidence in your abilities, knowing that what you've trained actually works, and whether you've had to prove that for yourself or you've taken it on good opinion from people that you know have been there, you know, so that then you do have a genuine confidence in what the skills you've got. And then being able to hit really hard, you know, as Jeff always says, you know, number one self-defense tip, hit really hard. I think he uses slightly other words than that, but I'll keep it tame for the audience. But yeah, being able to hit really hard. And then on back of that, having a support system that will back it up should you miss, or when you miss, because that happens as well.
I was going to say, how accurate are people usually in these violent situations?
Fear, the heat moment, your eagerness, to get it done and get it out of the way, it's, you know, that's it makes you miss tunnel vision, all of the negative side effects of adrenaline kick in, and suddenly, you know, you can't hit someone the size of that, you can't hit someone's head, you know, you struggle to hit their body, let alone hitting a particular spot on a target that you're trying to aim for, you know, or dare I say trying to hit a pressure point with your thumb or something. So, you know, just gross techniques, big slaps, big punches, big elbows, knees, kicks, you know, those kinds of things are the things that we look for. And yeah, you know, being precise is really difficult. That's why you need to, hitting hard is part of the reason for that, is that it's not just to be able to hit hard to knock someone out. You actually don't need to hit very hard to knock someone out. What you need to hit hard for is if you don't hit them on the right spot, that you can still do some damage, or you can still knock them over, or you can still create an element of shock and fear in them because you've just hit them like a train. And so I think that's really the reason for needing to hit hard. And hitting hard requires lots of practice. And lots of practice means, as a byproduct, you will get more target focused, and you will get more precise with your technique anyway. But we all need to understand, if you can't, and I do this on every seminar I teach, and I'll give the trick away now, but if you can't get your partner to put on the focus mitts and you throw your first preemptive strike from cold without having warmed up, and you can't hit it hard with knockout power on target in a comfortable, relaxed environment of a training dojo with your partner, then you can't expect your knockout preemptive strike to work outside when you're scared and you're in fear for your life, and you've got to make it work first time. And so that's the level of ability you need to get to. You need to be able to do it first time every time. But back to the question, for me, the main thing, and this is the one thing that a lot of instructors skip past quite quickly, is having good awareness, being street savvy, being able to read situations, taking decisive action, taking action early rather than later is crucial. And they're the things that prevent all the requirement for all the other stuff. You know, if I've got good awareness and I actually practice it and I train it and I can understand situations, and I have the courage to act upon it so that I can avoid things more quickly and earlier, then I don't need to worry about being able to take a heavy shot, or being able to worry about fear, or being able to have confidence in my abilities, or hit really hard, because I don't get there. I never get that far in the process, and I think that's crucial. I want to avoid every fight. I don't want to have to prove that my right cross still works every day I leave the house, you know.
Al, thank you very much for speaking to us today on the Den Show.
Chris, it's fantastic. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, and great to speak to you.
This is The Den Show.
So that just about wraps up this edition of The Den Show. And don't forget, you can leave your feedback on the podcast. Let me know your thoughts and feelings. What did you like? What would you like to hear more of? You can contact me via thedenshow.com, or you can tweet or leave me a message via Facebook. But for now, thank you for listening.
This is The Den Show with Chris Kaye.